Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for our daily magazine show, As It Is, and other programs designed for English learners.
Hello, it's time to do it again. Let's listen and learn American English with the Voice of America. We come to you every day from Washington with interesting stories. We always present these stories slowly to make it easy for you to follow along if English is not your first language. And we also use words that are easier to understand, or we explain what some difficult words or sentences mean. Today we have two stories for you. The first concerns a famous home here in the United States that may be damaged by rising waters. Then, possible danger of another kind, but this time on dry land. Let's get started with part one. Marcia James takes us to the middle of the United States with news about, well, let's let her tell the story.
The Farnsworth House in the Midwestern state of Illinois is one of the most famous homes in America. Thousands of people visit the house every year. It stands near the river that inspired its design. Now, that very placement is threatening the existence of this National Historic Landmark. The Farnsworth House is a one-room, steel and glass structure in rural Plano, Illinois. The Fox River flows next to the home. Edith Farnsworth was a doctor in the city of Chicago. She had the house built as a place where she could escape her work and the tensions of city life. Maurice Parrish is the chief of the National Trust for Historic Preservation. He says Edith Farnsworth asked a well-known architect to design plans for the house in 1945. That architect was Ludwig Mies van der Rohe. The design started a trend.
This is the house that made modernism popular in the United States and around the world.
Ludwig Mies van der Rohe designed the house knowing it would be built on a flood area.
He elevated the house 5 feet, 3 inches above the ground, which according to his research would make it at least a foot higher than the highest recorded flood level up until that time.
But even as it was being built in the early 1950s, floodwaters rose higher than expected. Since then, floodwaters have entered the house many times, causing extensive damage. The National Trust for Historic Preservation now manages the property. Maurice Parrish says they must do something. One idea is to move the house.
Unfortunately, there is no perfect solution.
Dirk Lohan is an architect in Chicago and a fan of the Farnsworth House. To him, it is more than a trend-setting design. Ludwig Mies van der Rohe was his grandfather and inspired Mr. Lohan's own career.
If he had been his own client, he would have designed the house exactly the way it is.
Mr. Lohan does not want the house to be moved. He favors the use of a lift that could raise the home when the waters rise.
That house was designed for that location. Why do we have to move it if we have the technical ability to protect it in that location?
The National Trust for Historic Preservation and the nonprofit group Landmark Illinois are investigating possible solutions. They will announce later this year where visitors can see the house in the future. I'm Marcia James.
You are listening to the Voice of America, and we are coming to you from Washington. The United States is increasing production of oil and natural gas through a process known as fracking. This process is sometimes called hydraulic fracking because it uses pressurized water. Fracking requires the use of silica sand. Demand for the sand could rise as much as 200% over the next 5 years. But along with rising demand come concerns about silica sand mining operations. People who live near the mines are worried about how the sand will affect their businesses and their health. Bob Doty has more on the story.
There has been an increase in the mining of silica sand in the American state of Illinois, and people who live near the mines are worried. Hickory Hollow Campground is a popular place to stay for some of the several million people who visit the Illinois River Valley every year. The campground, in the village of Utica, is a short drive from a state park.
It's a family campground where we have RVs, tent camping.
That is Sandy Esmond. She is the owner of the campground. She says the camp now has a new neighbor, a mining operation that is extracting white silica sand from the ground. Before the sand is shipped, it sits in large piles near the campground. But Sandy Esmond says it does not stay there.
Well, I have to take a leaf blower at least once a day, blow the sand off of everything.
She says the sand does more than interfere with day-to-day activities. It is also causing health problems.
Well, a lot of people come out here, I imagine, asthma, health issues, breathing problems.
Robert Cohen is a clinical professor of environmental and occupational health sciences at the University of Illinois at the Chicago School of Public Health. He says silica can be dangerous.
Well, silica is a pretty toxic substance, especially freshly fractured silica. It can cause a number of bad health effects in the body. So it causes cancer, respiratory cancers. And so that's another important concern with silica exposures.
Dr. Cohen has examined people who worked in silica sand mining operations. But he says little is known about the effect of sand particles in the air on human health.
If the mine is a surface mine and there's ambient wind that's carrying this freshly fractured dust and your house is covered with dust and you run your finger along the surfaces and you find it, then there is some exposure there and there probably should be some concern.
The mining operation has taken measures to try to keep the sand from blowing into the Hickory Hollow campground. But Sandy Esmond says the mine has not done enough.
I've expressed all my concerns to them. We understand, but do they really?
Ms. Esmond worries that the sight of sand on the campground will force her to sell her business.
I hate to do that. We have a lot of good customers that come. Where are all these people going to go that love to camp?
Earlier this year, the Illinois legislature approved a bill to study the effect of silica sand mining on homes and businesses. Governor Bruce Rauner has yet to sign the bill. In an email to VOA this week, the governor's press secretary said only that Mr. Rauner will carefully consider any legislation that crosses his desk. Even if the governor does sign the bill, the study would not be completed until January 2017. Our office has attempted to speak with silica companies, but we have so far not been able to do so. I'm Bob Doty.
Stay with us for more Learning English programs just seconds away. and more American history with the making of a nation in less than 5 minutes. This is VOA.
Coming up, more programs designed for English learners. You can read and listen to our reports and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Education Report. The United States Supreme Court said last week it will rehear arguments on a controversial college admissions policy. The case involves affirmative action, the custom of helping groups that have been treated unfairly in the past. The Supreme Court plans to hear the case of Abigail Fisher for the second time. Ms. Fisher, a white female, was denied admission to the University of Texas at Austin in 2008. Ms. Fisher took legal action against the University of Texas. Her case went to the U.S. Supreme Court in 2013. The court sent the case back to a lower court, which supported the university. In 2003, the Supreme Court ruled that schools can consider an applicant's race as part of their admissions decisions. The court's majority said that schools have a compelling interest in having a racially mixed student population. Michael Yockey is a member of the U.S. Civil Rights Commission. He says affirmative action is a good thing. He says race should not prevent someone from getting into a university, but he thinks it should be a consideration when university officials want to create balance in a class. In his words, our nation is stronger when people from diverse cultures and diverse backgrounds can work, live, and study together. Supporters say affirmative action is needed to increase economic and other opportunities for some minority groups. Tom Fitton is president of Judicial Watch, a policy group in Washington, D.C. He says colleges should make decisions based only on a student's ability or merit. He says race-based admissions programs are a violation of the U.S. Constitution. People are harmed by these decisions, he says, because for every person who gets in because they are a minority, there is someone who may be left out because they are not. Mr. Fitton says affirmative action hurts Asian American students. The 2010 census found that Asian Americans make up about 6% of the U.S. population, but they make up about 40% of the undergraduate students at the University of California at Berkeley. Some people say the percentage of Asian students at top U.S. universities would be even higher without affirmative action. Abigail Fisher now works at a finance company after completing studies at Louisiana State University. The Supreme Court will hear her case against the University of Texas in October. The court's decision could have a major effect on the diversity of U.S. college classrooms in the future. I'm Anne Ball.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember. This week in our series, we begin the story of the presidency of George W. Bush. His first term came to be defined by the worst terrorist attack against the United States in the nation's history. George W. Bush had been in office for less than 8 months when the events of September 11th, 2001 took place.
A plane has crashed into one of the towers of the World Trade Center.
Good Lord, this is just a horrific moment.
The day is remembered as 9/11. On that morning, 19 Al-Qaeda terrorists hijacked 4 large passenger airplanes on the East Coast. The planes were flying to California, so they were heavy with fuel. Each group of hijackers included a trained pilot. American Airlines Flight 11 had just left Boston, Massachusetts, when 5 hijackers seized control of the plane.
Is that American 11 trying to call?
We have some planes. Just stay quiet and you'll be okay. We're returning to the airport.
American 11, are you trying to call?
Number 3 in the back. The cockpit's not answering. Somebody's stabbed in business class. I don't know. I think we're getting hijacked.
Nobody move. Everything will be okay. If you try to make any move, you'll danger yourself and the airplane.
Shortly before 9 o'clock, the hijackers crashed the Boeing 767 into the North Tower of the World Trade Center in New York City.
A plane has just crashed into the World Trade Center. It happened just a few moments ago.
The World Trade Center, Tower number 1, is on fire. The whole outside of the building, it was just a huge explosion.
5 other hijackers seized United Airlines Flight 175, another Boeing 767, also on a flight from Boston.
Hey, can you look out your window right now? Can you see a guy at about 4,000 feet, about 5 East Airport right now? Looks like he's...
Yeah, hi, Sam.
You see a guy, look, is he descending through the building also?
He's descending really quick, too, yeah.
Well, that's...
2,500 feet now. He just dropped 800 feet in like one sweep.
That's another situation.
Another one just hit the building.
Well,
hit it hard.
Another one just hit the World Trade.
The whole building just came apart.
Oh, God.
They crashed the jet into the South Tower of the World Trade Center a short time after the first plane hit the North Tower.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
That looks like a second plane. You just saw another plane coming in from the side.
You did. That was out of...
Yes, and that's the second explosion. You could see the plane come in. So this looks like it is some sort of a concerted effort to attack the World Trade Center that is underway in downtown New York.
The Twin Towers each had 110 floors. They were the tallest buildings in New York and among the tallest in the world. They stood a few streets away from the New York Stock Exchange in the heart of the Wall Street Financial District in Lower Manhattan.
Oh my God!
Oh my goodness, there's another one.
The planes exploded in fireballs that sent clouds of smoke pouring from the skyscrapers. Thousands of people were in the buildings. Many workers on the floors below where the planes hit were able to escape. Others on the floors above were trapped. Some apparently felt their only choice was between burning to death and jumping. News cameras showed disturbing images of bodies falling from the towers. The South Tower of the World Trade Center collapsed just before 10 o'clock, after burning for almost an hour. The North Tower came down about 30 minutes later. It had been hit first and had burned for 1 hour and 42 minutes.
The second building that was hit by the plane has just completely collapsed, as if a demolition team set off, when you see the old demolitions of these old buildings, down on itself, and it is not there anymore.
Investigators later found that the intense fires from the jet fuel, burning for as long as they had caused the structures to fail. The ruins of the two buildings quickly became known as Ground Zero. Several other buildings in the World Trade Center complex were damaged or destroyed as a result of the collapse of the Twin Towers. Another group of hijackers took over American Airlines Flight 77, a Boeing 757. The plane had taken off from Washington Dulles International Airport.
Okay, American Airlines is still airborne. He's heading towards Washington. I think we need to scramble Langley right now, and I'm gonna take the fighters from Otis and try to chase this guy down if I can find
him. Mick Leshefsky has some new information at the Pentagon. I hope you'll stand by and continue to talk with us, Mick.
Katie, I don't want to alarm anybody right now, but it felt just a few moments ago like there was an explosion of some kind here at the Pentagon.
The hijackers crashed the plane into the Pentagon, the Department of Defense headquarters, across the Potomac River from Washington in Arlington, Virginia. The plane exploded a hole into one of the five sides of the huge building. And four hijackers seized United Airlines Flight 93, another 757. That plane had taken off from Newark, New Jersey.
United 93, that traffic through is 1 o'clock, 12 miles eastbound, 370.
Negative contact, we're looking, United 93.
People on the flight learned about the terrorist attacks in New York and Washington through phone calls to loved ones.
It looks like he descended
there. So. United 93, verify 350.
United 93, Cleveland.
Go ahead, Frank.
Do you have United 93?
We hear some funny noises. We're trying to get him.
Do you have him?
No.
Some of the 40 passengers and crew members fought to retake control of the plane from the hijackers. Air traffic controllers and law enforcement officials struggled to make sense of the events taking place that morning.
United 93, have you got information on that yet?
Yeah, he's down.
He's down?
Yes.
When did he land? Because we have confirmation.
He did not land.
Oh, he's down?
Yes,
down?
Somewhere up northeast of Camp David.
Okay, there is now on that United 93.
Yes.
There is a report of black smoke in the last position I gave you. 15 miles south of Johnstown.
Flight 93 crashed in a field near the small town of Shanksville, Pennsylvania. The intended target for Flight 93 may have been the Capitol, the building where Congress meets. No one could be sure if other airliners were involved in the terrorist operation.
The Federal Aviation Administration has actually gone even further than it did a few minutes ago. It was asking all planes not to take off. Now the FAA has ordered all aircraft currently in the air over the United States to land at the nearest airport.
Air traffic controllers began the complex job of getting all planes across the country and those heading in over the Atlantic onto the ground safely.
So this meant at very early in the morning, as flights were halfway across the Atlantic Ocean to land in the United States, we had already initiated protocols to shut those arrivals off from the oceanic areas, and they had to make tough decisions such as either turn around and go back to Europe or go to alternate destinations, which many of them did in Canada.
Canadian officials assisted. They allowed flights from across the Atlantic to land in eastern Canada, including at airports in Halifax, Nova Scotia, and Gander, Newfoundland. Almost 3,000 people died in the 9/11 attacks.
You got coming in for building number 2 on the 97th floor. People trapped.
91 floor. We're all around the building. We're completely around the building. We're into the building now.
Most of the victims worked in the World Trade Center.
Battalion 7, Operation Tower 1.
The victims also included rescuers. Among them, 343 New York City firefighters. They died trying to save others. Pictures of missing persons began to appear in the city as loved ones waited and worried. 3 days after the attacks, President Bush went to Ground Zero. He spoke to the rescue workers and promised that the attacks would be answered.
I want you all to know, the nation stands with the good people of New York City and New Jersey and Connecticut as we mourn the loss of thousands of our citizens. I can hear you, the rest of the world hears you, and the people who knocked these buildings down will hear all of us soon.
Each day, thousands of visitors came to see the site and to honor those who died. At the Pentagon, people left flowers and messages of sympathy near the heavily damaged wall. 184 people died in the attack on the Pentagon, including the victims on the plane. It took months to clear the wreckage of the Twin Towers. The attacks in New York changed the distinctive skyline of Lower Manhattan. The Twin Towers, completed in 1973, were gone. The economic effects of 9/11 were felt far beyond America's largest city. The New York Stock Exchange stayed closed until September 17th. When it reopened, the Dow Jones Industrial Average, a measure of leading stocks, fell by what was then its biggest point drop ever in a single day. Among the companies most affected by the attacks were airlines and other businesses that depend on travelers. The nation's skies were empty of commercial flights for 3 days after the hijackings. And when flights returned to normal, many people were too afraid to fly. Thousands of hotel workers and others in the travel industry lost their jobs. The shock and sadness of the 9/11 attacks brought Americans together less than a year after the disputed presidential election. In a show of patriotism, more and more American flags began to appear on homes, cars, and businesses. Small American flag pins were worn by many Americans. The attacks pointed to the work of Osama bin Laden and his Al-Qaeda organization. On September 20th, President Bush went before a joint session of Congress to declare a war on terror.
Our war on terror begins with Al-Qaeda, but it does not end there. It will not end until every terrorist group of global reach has been found, stopped, and defeated.
The War on Terror and America After 9/11 will be our story next week. You can find our series online with transcripts, MP3s, podcasts, and pictures at voaspecialenglish.com. You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter at VOA Learning English. I'm Steve Ember, inviting you to join us again next week for The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English.